The Surgeon. First published in Playboy, January 1988. You have done extraordinarily well, Robert Sandys said, seating himself behind the desk. It's altogether a splendid recovery. I don't think there's any need for you to come and see me anymore. The patient finished putting on his clothes and said to the surgeon, May I speak to you, please, for another moment? Of course you may, Robert Sandys said. Take a seat. The man sat down opposite the surgeon and leaned forward, placing his hands palms downward on top of the desk. I suppose you still refuse to take a fee, he said. I've never taken one yet, and I don't propose to change my ways at this time of life, Robert Sandy told him pleasantly. I work entirely for the National Health Service, and they pay me a very fair salary. Robert Sandy, M.A., M. Shear, F.R.C.S., had been at the Radcliffe Infirmary in Oxford for 18 years, and he was now 52 years old, with a wife and three grown-up children. Unlike many of his colleagues, he did not hanker after fame and riches. He was basically a simple man, utterly devoted to his profession. It was now 7 weeks since his patient, a university undergraduate, had been rushed into casualty by ambulance after a nasty car accident in the Banbury Road not far from the hospital. He was suffering from massive abdominal injuries and he had lost consciousness. When the call came through from casualty for an emergency surgeon, Robert Sandy was up in his office having a cup of tea after a fairly arduous morning's work, which had included a gallbladder, a prostate, and a total colostomy. But for some reason, he happened to be the only general surgeon available at that moment. He took one more sip of his tea, then walked straight back into the operating theatre and started scrubbing up all over again. After 3.5 hours on the operating table, the patient was still alive, and Robert Sandy had done everything he could to save his life. The next day, to the surgeon's considerable surprise, the man was showing signs that he was going to survive. In addition, his mind was lucid and he was speaking coherently. It was only then, on the morning after the operation, that Robert Sandy began to realize that he had an important person on his hands. Three dignified gentlemen from the Saudi Arabian embassy, including the ambassador himself, came into the hospital, and the first thing they wanted was to call in all manner of celebrated surgeons from Harley Street to advise on the case. The patient, with bottles suspended all round his bed and tubes running into many parts of his body, shook his head and murmured something in Arabic to the ambassador. He says he only wants you to look after him, the ambassador said to Robert Sandy. You are very welcome to call in anyone else you choose for consultation, Robert Sandy said. Not if he doesn't want us to, the ambassador said. He says you have saved his life, and he has absolute faith in you. We must respect his wishes.